I Am the One Entrepreneur Edition is brought to you by Try Business School. Get your free five-part mini course on the five things successful entrepreneurs focus on. Visit iamtheone.fm/5 to get access.
I am Tucker Max, and I am the one.
Entrepreneur Edition, a show that explores the journeys of business owners who decided to be the one to make life better for the people they serve. I'm your host, Sonia Thompson, and today's guest is Tucker Max. Tucker is a co-founder of Book in a Box, a service that helps authors turn their ideas into books without having to write a word. Tucker is also the author of 3 New York Times bestsellers. His first book, I Hope They Serve Beer in Hell, stayed on the New York Times bestseller list for 5 years and has more than 2 million copies in print. We can learn so much from Tucker, including what he's learned about how to productize his service. We've covered a lot of ground in this discussion, so there's plenty more insights you'll get besides that one, too. But before we dive into the interview, I want to let you know that this episode is brought to you by Try Business School, which is all about helping you become a successful entrepreneur by helping you create the right strategy to grow your business and giving you the resources you need to execute that plan. And to help you with that, I've got a free 5-part mini course for you that uncovers the 5 things successful entrepreneurs focus on. After interviewing more than 100 entrepreneurs, including several who've built multi-million dollar businesses, I've been able to whittle down the 5 things they focus on that fuels their success. So head on over to iamtheone.fm/5 to get access to this free mini course today. All right, let's get to it. Here's Tucker. Hey, Tucker, thank you so much for joining me today. How are you?
Good. How are you? Thanks for having me.
Oh, it's my pleasure. All right, well, let's go ahead and dive right in. Tell me about your business, Book in a Box.
So basically what we do is we turn ideas into books without you having to do anything except know what you're talking about. So I've developed a process, or my co-founder and I have developed a process where we kind of interview you in a very structured way and take your ideas and put them in a book in your words and your voice.
Got it.
That's the short pitch.
Okay. So what would you say is the specific problem that you solve for the people that you serve?
Well, so for most people, writing a book is really hard. For the average person, even for professional writers who do this for a living, writing a book is hard. But for the average person, it's even harder.
Okay.
And it can take, you know, it takes people anywhere from 1,000 to 2,000 hours sitting at your computer typing to get a book out of your head. And that's just not a realistic, amount of time for most people. That's why most people who have good books in them don't actually finish their books, is because they take so long, right? And so what we've done is compress that time from 2,000 hours to 20 hours.
Wow.
That's if you pay us. So all you really have to do, so think about it. If you want to write a book, you have to learn how to, first off, you have to find the time.
Okay.
Then you've got to learn how to structure a book. Then you've got to worry about what order you're putting it in. You've got to worry about all these things. You have to learn all these things that don't have anything to do with your knowledge and your ideas that are going in the book.
Okay.
So we've basically eliminated that. The way I like to compare it is sort of like we do to books what the iPhone did to photography.
Okay.
You know, like it used to be a huge pain in the ass to be a good photographer because you had to have all this equipment, you had to spend all this time taking pictures, you didn't know if they were any good, you had to go develop film, like all that crazy stuff. Now all you need is this tiny little hunk of metal and a good eye and you can be a great photographer. We've done the same thing for books.
Got it. So what made you decide, you and your partner, that you were going to be the one to solve this problem? Because a ton of people want to write a book.
Right. So, well, it kind of fell into my lap, to be honest. I wish I could tell you I had some amazing master plan and I was a genius and I saw this a decade out, but I didn't. What happened, I actually am or was a professional author, and I wrote multiple books, and three of them were number one bestseller, New York Times bestsellers, and they sold like 3 million copies worldwide and translated to like 40 languages and all that nonsense. And so I knew how to write books. I was very good at it. And I was at an entrepreneur dinner, and this woman asked me, she said, listen, people have been asking me to write a book for 10 years, but I don't have the time to sit down at a computer for a year and spend thousands of hours doing this. I have children and a business to run. I can't also write a book. She's like, how can I get this book out of my head without having to do that? And so, of course, being an elitist, snobby writer, I made fun of her. And I was like, are you asking me how to write a book without writing it? And she said, yeah, I kind of am. And I was like, there's no way to do that. It's literally in the word, writing. Like you can't do that. And so she kind of, and I started lecturing her about hard work and being a total prick. And she stopped me and she said, Tucker, are you an entrepreneur? Because this is an entrepreneur dinner. So I assume you're an entrepreneur. And I'm like, yeah, of course. She's like, I don't know. I don't think so. Because I am an entrepreneur and I spend all day helping people solve their problems. Are you going to help me solve my problem or just lecture me about hard work? And she was 100% right. I was totally crestfallen and called out because I was being a prick and an elitist snob, and she was right. And so I got obsessed with this. How do I solve this woman's problem? How do I get her book out of her head without her having to touch a keyboard? And I didn't think I could do it until I remembered, oh my God, I've read so many books by famous titans of Western culture who never wrote anything down. Socrates never wrote a word down. Jesus never wrote a word down. Malcolm X never wrote a word down. Buddha never wrote a word down. They had scribes writing down their words in the books. Well, I was like, well, if Buddha can do it, why can't Melissa? And so I basically wrote down everything you have to do to write a book, every step. Mm-hmm. And I knew them all. And then I was like, all right, instead of telling Melissa to do these, what if I just got on the phone with her and got the steps out of her by interviewing her, right? And so the thing is, she didn't want ghostwriting. Like, she didn't want me to write her book. First off, because she's not like that. She wanted it to be her ideas and her words and her voice. Mm-hmm. But also, she's like in this weird niche, pop-up retail, which is, I mean, it's like not that weird for retail people, but I don't know anything about pop-up retail. I wear the same clothes every single day. Mm-hmm. So I'm the worst person to write anything at all about retail. So I wasn't going to learn her field. So I had to get her, it was about getting her knowledge out of her head and into a book. And so we tested this and we just got on the phone and I knew each stage what we had to do. So first we kind of outlined her ideas, we structured them, I wrote a full outline, then I interviewed her off the outline, got everything out of her head, then I recorded those interviews, we got that transcribed, and then I basically turned that transcription into book prose, so it read really well on the page, and it turned out it worked amazingly well. I honestly did not think this was going to work, and it worked great. And then, of course, like all these people, she referred people, and then I did a podcast talking about this, and we had 20 clients in 2 months, all from an idea. I could have done this 10 years ago if I wasn't so arrogant. Is the problem.
Right. That's a great story, and I think it's something. The way you described it, it's so simple all the time that somebody has a problem, and it's something that we do every day. But we don't necessarily see how we can translate that into a service. So how did you go from, what was there a specific process that you went from taking something that you do every day as part of your career to figuring out a way to take that system and pull it and make it into something that's duplicatable for somebody else? Was that...
Right. How did I productize my service is what you're asking.
Right.
So honestly, it comes down to really breaking down the steps, right? So what I essentially did is I made explicit the knowledge that I already had in my head. I knew how to construct a book. Mm-hmm. So I pretended I was teaching Melissa how to do it herself, right? And then I wrote thinking, okay, if I had to teach her how to do it, how would I do it? And so I wrote everything down. That I would have taught her. And then I just did that. I did each step, right? And so by it seems like it's a really obvious thing. Oh, yeah, just teach them how to do it, whatever. But you actually have to pretend you're teaching someone who doesn't know how to do it. Because if I was just assuming in my own head, yeah, I know it, I don't need to write it down, I actually realized as I was writing these things down that I was skipping a lot of steps,
okay.
Right? So like, as I was teaching Melissa, I made a lot of steps that were implicit. I made them explicit,
okay.
Right?
Okay.
And so by pretending it was somebody else, and my co-founder, Zach, I worked through this with him. And so we kind of, that process, he's a really smart dude, but he didn't really know books as well as I did.
Okay.
So I had to explain a lot of things to him. And that forced me to get everything out of my head and into this process.
Okay.
And then basically that's what our process does with an author, is we force them to get everything out of their head and explain. And if they can't explain it, they don't actually know it. It's
right.
A great test.
Right.
If you can't teach something, you probably don't know it very well. You know, you might be able to do it, but if you can't teach it, you don't know it, right? And so that's really what I did, is I forced myself to teach it to somebody else. Because then that made it step by step by step. And then the next step was having Zach do it a bunch of times,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
And that created our process. And then from there, now we have 14 full-time employees and about 150 or so freelancers we work with. And they all, the process is much more refined, but they all work through that exact process now, exactly the way that kind of the exact same way that we do. But they do it because of that first set of steps.
Got it.
You know?
This is fascinating. So one other quick question on this and how you were able to do it before we move on to some of your experiences. How many times did you have to go through it, through your systematized, through your process to validate that this works? Is it something like, okay, you did it the first time, you make tweaks. Did you have to do it like 10 times, 20 times?
Yeah, it's a good question. So I think it depends on what your goal is. The first time will tell you that it works, right? For us, it worked the first time with Melissa. Now, it was rough. It took us 8 or 9 months. Now it takes 5 to 6 months, right? But it was proof of concept that it worked. But to doing it yourself is not the same thing as doing it at scale, right? We're doing this at scale now. We've done 300 books in 2 years. So, and I haven't done a book in a long time. We have more talented people than me working the process, but it took us a long time. If you think of it like the 80-20 rule, the first 80%, we got the first go around basically, right? That last 20% took like a year and a half, right? It was really hard to really refine it and really nail down every detail so that we could have other people doing it the same way as we do it or even better, right? That took a lot of attention to detail and that took a lot of work. But validating the concept is basically, can you do it once? Scaling it is, can you have other people doing it independent of you with the quality necessary? And I think those are different skills that take totally different amounts of time.
For sure, for sure. All right, well, let's switch gears a little bit and find out a little bit more about your experiences as an entrepreneur. So you mentioned that you've been writing books for years, you've had all these bestsellers, but what would you say was the number one mindset barrier that you had to overcome that enabled you to be successful in building your business?
So it's funny. The thing that helped me be a really good writer actually held me back in business. And when you're a writer, basically you can do everything yourself.
Okay.
You know, like in fact, that's one of the reasons I think I was good at writing and I liked it, is because I could totally rely on myself and the buck stopped with me. I didn't have to delegate things. I didn't have to outsource. I didn't have to teach other people anything. I just had to be my own self-contained little genius, and either it worked or it didn't, right? It doesn't work at all like that in business. Even the smallest businesses, like right now we're only 14 people or something, working with, you know, 100, 150 freelancers, pretty small business,
mm-hmm.
by business standards. But if I tried to have anything even approaching that same mindset that I'm going to do it all myself or it starts with me, this business would not work at all. It would be a disaster. In fact, I recently, about 4 months ago, fired myself as the CEO of this company, and we brought in an outside CEO who's done amazing. He's way better than me because I was the throttle on growth on this company because I was still holding too much internally and trying to make everything flow through me and trying to like do everything myself in a lot of ways, and it just wasn't working. It just doesn't work. It doesn't scale. You've got to not just learn how to trust people, but you've got to learn to find the right people. You've got to, and then you've got to basically empower them to go do. You, basically, what you want to do is hire better people than you at a job, and then leave them alone and let them nail that job. And I was not good at that. That was the mindset that held me back. I was so bad at it. Instead of changing the mindset, I just fired myself and hired someone who's really good at it. Right. And I just got the hell out of the job.
So what was there a specific thing that happened? Because you've known this about yourself for a while, but was there a specific thing that happened that you're like, oh gosh, I have to like make a change right now?
So Zach and I started the company. I was CEO, he was COO, like those were our roles. And I saw he was screwing up, and he has a similar sort of problem. So he was screwing up in the COO role. So we decided to hire a general manager, someone who was just in charge of operations, right? And this was going to be a big hire for us. It was really important, et cetera, et cetera. So we spent a lot of time interviewing and looking for people. And I decided early on the person I wanted. And I basically stopped being a critical thinker. And I started defending my selection. And that just doesn't work. Right? That created a big problem. And so we ended up hiring the wrong person. And she's a great person, but she was a disaster for the company. And it really hurt us a lot. And because of that, it was basically my fault. And that mishire is what really led to me saying, you know what? I'm not right to be CEO. He's not right to be CEO. I'm not right to be CEO. We both need to do different jobs in the company, and we need to bring in someone who is better than us at those two jobs. And that's what we have now. We have an ops director and a CEO who are ballers and amazing at their jobs, way better than we ever were.
Wonderful. It's an excellent lesson. Excellent lesson. All right. So you mentioned earlier that you were lecturing your first client about the virtues of hard work. So what would you say enables you, like, are there specific habits that you have felt have enabled you to work as hard and produce as much and get the types of results that you have received over the course of your entrepreneurial career?
You know, it's a good question. I don't know. I mean, I don't know if I have any set of habits that are like, probably if you sat around and watched me, you would notice things that I don't notice that are like sort of ingrained in me. I would say there's actually two things maybe, and it's not a habit, it's more of a mindset. In terms of habits, I don't really have, I don't think I have good habits. I think it's one of the things I've been working on is developing better routines. Because I always get my work done. I don't feel like I get it done in a really timely or efficient manner. But I do have two good mindsets. One is that I am always, always questioning my assumptions and what I think. If I think X, I'm never like, okay, I think X and that's it. You know, like if you've ever argued with someone about politics, either side, like, whatever it is, abortion, minimum wage, it doesn't matter, right? It doesn't matter how many facts you present to them of the other side, they're never going to change their mind. So what I always do is I ask them, what evidence would change your mind about abortion or minimum wage or guns or whatever? And most people can't even answer. They're like, there's no evidence. So I'm like, so you don't actually have a belief. You just, it's not a reasoned belief. You just have decided that you have a position and that's it. I am almost never like that. I've changed my mind on almost everything in my life multiple times. And I'm always willing to examine my assumptions. And I think most people aren't. And that's really important as an entrepreneur because so I see it as I've been an angel investor for 5 years and I've invested in like 80 plus companies. And that's one of my number one things that I will not invest in is someone who does not have a flexible mindset in terms of thinking like what do they believe?
Right.
And if they don't believe what the facts tell them,
right,
then I won't invest in them. You know, so that's one thing. The other thing is, Question assumptions, I'm always willing to ask the hard questions, both, and it's kind of tied together, but both about myself and about the company, right? So many people will embed or imbi- like, I believe X, and then that's just it, right? And you can't talk them off of it. I'm always willing to go back and ask, should we be doing this? Is this the right way? Why are we doing it this way? That's why I ended up firing myself as CEO, is because I asked the hard question, should I be in this role? Like, am I qualified to do this? And the answer was pretty clearly no after a certain point. And so willing to ask hard questions and willing to challenge assumptions and then take the actions that those push into, those are, I think, two of the reasons why I've been successful in a lot of things is those two attributes.
Now, would you consider these your superpowers or your secret sauce that has enabled you to have the success that you've had over your career? Or is it a combination of a bunch of different things?
I don't know. It's a good question. I'm not sure. If I knew that absolutely certain, then I would bottle it and sell it. Like if I knew absolutely what led to my success. Probably if there was those two things, definitely. And if there was one other thing I would point to, it's I'm willing. You know what it is? I think a lot of people are afraid of, they're afraid of not just risks, they're afraid of change. And I'm not afraid of change. And I'm not afraid of taking risks. In fact, I've taken probably too many stupid risks in my life. But I think so many people, I know so many people who are smarter than me and who are more talented than me and by all rights should be way more accomplished than I am and do way more, but don't. And the only real difference I see is that they're afraid. They're afraid to take risks and they're afraid to do things. They're holding on to something or they're afraid of what other people think or whatever. And it's not that I don't care what anyone else thinks or I'm not afraid at all. It's more that to me, I'm more afraid. I guess I'm more afraid of not taking the risk and taking it. I'm more afraid of being stagnant than change. And most people are more afraid of change than they are staying where they are.
Definitely. Definitely. All right. So you mentioned that you, like when writing books, you're able to do much of that work yourself. But now you've got a team of people, you've got a co-founder, you've got people that you work with. What if you had to rate yourself on a scale of 1 to 10 of where relationships fall in the importance of what you do and getting things done? What would you rate yourself?
11.
Okay.
I mean, like, we're a relationship company. Our process is how we started, but once the process is fixed and once we have that figured out, it's a commodity at that point. And now what matters is the relationships we have with our authors and with the people who work with us.
Got it.
Like, it's all about that. Like, you don't need to, listen, we're not a software company. If you're a software company, I guess you don't need to have a relationship with your software or something. I don't know. We deal with people, man, on both sides. Both the freelancers we work with and internally and our authors are all people. And how we navigate and negotiate those relationships is what determines our success. It's not like how important are they. It's almost like asking how important is air. I mean, like, there's nothing here without it.
Right.
It's foundational.
Okay. Is there anything that you do specifically to make sure that you nurture those relationships since they are so essential to your existence?
That's the funny. It's one of the reasons why I'm not CEO, because I'm not so good at that.
Okay.
I'm really good at intimate relationships, like deep relationships with people I know and I like. I'm not so good at, I don't want to say shallow, but more casual sort of relationships. My CEO is. He's really good. He's good at both. And that's why he's CEO, man, is because he's better. He's straight up better at relationships than I am. And I think there are a lot of right now, the most entrepreneurship you see is in the tech business. And because that business is it's kind of an unusual inflection point in history. You don't have to be super relationship-based in tech right now. But the thing is, all tech becomes eventually commodified, which means that all businesses become about people. which means they're about relationships. And you're starting to see that the businesses, even the tech businesses that get that, win. And the ones that don't, don't. And a perfect example is Dell versus Apple, right? You think neither, Steve Jobs is terrible with people, like, but the difference is Dell has been a commodity company. Like, they just make computers. No one cares about their stuff. Apple makes hardware that you feel like you have a relationship with, you know? And so even though they're not good interpersonal relationships, they make products that feel that way, right? The next iteration, obviously, is a company that makes great products, but then they actually are great at customer service, too. Like, you feel like you know them. That's the next step. But no, there's nothing. There are very few businesses where relationships don't matter. And I think especially as AI comes online and all these other businesses, all of tech is ultimately about connecting people. And if you can't negotiate those relationships, you're going to fall behind the people who can.
Definitely. All right. So what can we expect from you and your team in the future?
We're going to get bigger. We're going to do more books. We're going to become the default place for professionals to do books. I mean, right now we're still small. We're only 2 years old. We've done 300 books is a massive amount in the industry we're in. It's incredible, actually. But in terms of the potential market out there, I think there's at least 100,000, probably two or three times that many people who could be clients of ours. So we've barely even scratched the surface of our clients, the potential clients that we can work with. And then I think we're going to expand beyond books. Like, what we've done is create a process to turn an idea into a finished media product. And I think we're eventually going to go way beyond. There's no reason we can't do speech in a box, podcast in a box, pitch deck in a box, you know, any number of things. We've already started. We have a kind of a beta division that Zach started called Platform in a Box, where people, instead of just a book, we're doing entire media platforms with people, and all they have to do is get on the phone with us and know what they're talking about, and we handle everything else. So I think as long as people need to communicate with other people, we're gonna be doing something around that, and that's probably not gonna end in my lifetime.
Oh, that's super exciting. Any parting words of wisdom for entrepreneurs who are working hard trying to build a successful business and make life better for the people they serve?
Yes. So you actually nailed it. This is my kind of boilerplate advice for entrepreneurs, but it is something, it's so fundamental and so many people either ignore it or don't think about it. And you actually nailed it with the second part of your thing. You're saying entrepreneurs are, you know, and the people they serve. The entire point of business, not just entrepreneurship, is starting a new business. All business, without exception, is about meeting the needs of someone. That's why people give you money for a product or a service, is because it meets their needs. They value what you're doing more than they value the money you give them. And people forget about that. They talk about the economy like it's some disjointed thing that lives outside of humans. That's nonsense. It's humans giving, serving other humans and exchanging money is the medium of exchange for that. But the money represents other goods and services. That's all it is. It's people exchanging goods and services with each other so that they can have better lives. And so many entrepreneurs are like, oh yeah, I want to build a business. I want to make money. I want to... None of that. It's not that it doesn't matter. It's that the only way you get the trophy of lots of money, big business, famous, whatever, is by hitting the target of meeting real needs that real people have, solving real problems. And if you focus on that and hit that over and over and over again, everything else comes.
Definitely. And that links back to what we started with the beginning and how the business that you're working on now sort of was born. So, yeah.
Yep.
All right. So before I let you go, I do have one last question. And just to give us a little bit more insight into the person, Tucker. And that is to deliver a line from a movie that sticks out to you and explain why you chose that one.
Oh, that's so good. All right. Deliver a line from a movie. All right, so I actually just talked about this a few weeks ago with my CEO. You know the movie Hustle and Flow?
Mm-hmm.
Love that movie. I think it's the best movie out there. Hustle and Flow and 8 Mile are the two best movies about what the creative process feels like. Mm-hmm. And Hustle and Flow is very much an entrepreneur's movie. You think it's about rap music, it's not. It's about a creative a group of people making something new, making something out of nothing, right? So many great lines in that movie. One of my favorite is when the pimp rapper, Terrence Howard plays, goes over to Anthony Anderson's, the producer's house, and he's like kind of convincing him to come work with him. And Anthony Anderson gives this amazing speech about how the world is full of two people, talkers and walkers. And he basically is calling out Terrence Howard. Like, I think you're a talker, you know? And he's like, I'm a walker. I think you're a talker. And so they start actually like working on stuff. And he's like hitting music and Terrence Howard is rapping. And Anthony Anderson's, you know, like totally prim and proper wife comes in. She's like, what's going on here? And Anthony looks at her and he goes, we walk it. Like, that's one of my favorite fucking scenes in any movie, because to me that represents entrepreneurship. Like, you want to be an entrepreneur? Fucking walk. Walk the walk.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I love it. Oh, Tucker, this has been fantastic. Thank you so much for joining me and sharing all your insights. It's been really good.
Awesome. Thank you. Thanks for having me.
My pleasure.
Tucker had so many great things to share, and even though he had so many insights, there was one thing that stood out to me in particular. And that brings us to today's I Am the One challenge. How can you start to teach elements of what you do to someone else? Now that can be to a virtual assistant, a team member, or to your customers as a way to develop a new product. Think about it, and then once you've got your answer, head on over to iamtheone.fm/5 and get signed up for the mini course, The 5 Things Successful Entrepreneurs Focus On. Until next time, keep working on building your dream business so you can make life better. Somebody's waiting on you. Thanks for listening.